Happy New Year, James.
It is the new year.
It is. It's officially the new year.
Yeah.
I think this will be the second podcast of the year.
Yep.
Technically, but it's new year now. Mm-hmm. We are back to our weekend morning coffee-induced shenanigans.
We are, yes.
So, you know, normally we start with housekeeping, and I think we're going to leave the house in disarray for a little while. Let's get into some fun stuff right out of the gate, and we'll come back to housekeeping later.
Okay.
We got lots of good stuff to talk about there, but let's talk. Let's talk hops.
You name it. What are we talking about?
So, you mentioned that you got a note from a fellow grower out in San Diego.
Yes.
Who was having some issues.
I did, yeah. It was on the Facebook Hop Growing, I think, International Forum. And he had mentioned that, hey, gang, I put hops in Cascade, you know, 2 years ago. They grew great the first year, got all these flowers, everything looked great. Second year, the end of 2019, I should say, they grew vegetatively but never flowered. Then he cut them back in October, and they're resprouting. What do I do? Well, good question. they're two different issues. They may be related, but we're not sure. As social media forums are want to do, there's lots and lots of opinions passed off as fact. But ultimately, what it comes down to is that plants flower. I've said it before. It's the most energetic, metabolically energetic thing a plant can do, and it's only going to do it if it's in a scenario that is, you know, it's feeling good about itself, right? You're not going to go out and do the most energetic thing that you could possibly do if, say, oh, you're in kidney failure. So the question is, why didn't this plant flower? And it could be a few things. Let's take, like, day length and all that other more complicated stuff out of the picture, and let's go to the most obvious things, right? Because there's that concept, Occam's razor. And for those of you who don't know it, right? William of Ockham came up with this idea back in, I think it was the 1400s or 1500s, that said when faced with, you know, multiple outcomes or multiple possibilities, answers to questions, the simplest solution is usually the correct one. In this scenario, Occam's razor would say, did you water it enough? That is probably the single biggest factor in getting good flower development, is available water to the plant. We know from studies done on noble hop varieties that even a 15% reduction in optimal available water can equal a 50% yield reduction. That's huge. So the first thing I look at is, did you water it enough? Along with that, we can take a lesson from our last podcast where we talk about nitrates and minerals and plant minerals in solution. If you don't have enough water, you can have all the fertilizer in the soil that you want, but it's not going to get in the plant, or it's not going to get pushed into the soil. So you could have fertilized and that fertilizer is still sitting there. So now you're in a water nutrient, you're in a water deficit situation and a nutrient deficit situation. So you put two massive double whammies on that plant. So there's strike one, strike two.
And so interesting, I mean, the water being the vehicle for the nutrients to get in there, if you misdiagnose this as too little nutrients only and just keep adding more nutrients, nothing's going to change.
No, and it's what's going to happen is you're going to turn your soil into a sodic situation. So basically sodic means, as in sodium, salty. And that's going to cause problems. Actually, the salt content of the soil gets so high from fertilizers, it actually pulls moisture out of the roots. And they dry up and die. More is not better, per the last podcast. You've got, like I said, water and nutrients. So strike one, strike two. Strike three, heat. San Diego, you guys have had some extremely high heat over this last 2019. And if that plant can't cool itself properly through transpiration, right, water evaporating out of the leaves, it's going to overheat. And when a plant overheats, the leaf temperature gets too high, it shuts down. It goes into sort of suspended animation, almost like quasi-dormancy. It does nothing because it's like, holy balls, I've got to survive this awful condition. I can't waste any energy on anything. So I'm just going to sit here, okay? Likely, in the earlier part of the season, because, well, their temperatures are conducive to to growing year-round and being closer to the equator, even by a dozen degrees or more latitude. They have longer days in the wintertime. They get good growth early in the season. So my guess is this. Because of the early temperature and the longer days in the wintertime and springtime, and that's also when they would get their most rain or water, you got great vegetative growth. Then the water dried up, the temperatures got higher, and the nutrients weren't being delivered. So during the, quote, flowering period, that thing was dormant and just never did anything. Then you went and cut it down in October because, well, that's what you do, right? After the season's over, you cut it down. Well, that's what we do in the Pacific Northwest. That's what we do in Germany. That's what we do in New Zealand. But you're not in that area. So what do you do? I don't know. We could talk about that in another podcast. But again, you're following the directives of what other people are doing. The horticulture that was designed for their regions, not for yours. And so then what happens after he cuts it back? They resprout because of things like, what the hell happened to my top growth? And now in San Diego, they're getting all kinds of rain. The temperatures are down. So that hot plant's like, yes, time to go, bitches. Your photo period's all kind of wacky now. There's lots and lots of compounding factors here, and it's not one single issue. These are my opinions. But I look on social media, and everybody wants to be helpful, and they throw out little tidbits of information, but everybody is still looking for one single easy button. What is it? It's this. Okay, if I change this, everything's fine. No, that's not the scenario. You have multiple layers of variables that are impacting your productivity here. And unless you understand the system and educate yourself on all of these dynamic parts of the system, you're constantly going to be chasing your tail.
Yeah, the layers are a very good point. There are so many different things going on, and they all interface with each other, and they all affect each other. I love the Occam's razor piece because, yes, always go for what should be the likely scenario, but you've got to know all of those offshoot scenarios that are possible.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So let's take a look at them. And when I'm doing this, like we did with our flashcard episode, walking through and, you're throwing me observations, in my mind, I'm ticking them off. I'm saying, okay, what am I seeing? What is that potential cause of that, right? Whatever it is, observation I'm seeing. And then I start thinking about which ones are the most likely. We always go to the worst case scenario right off the bat. And typically it's, oh, my plant has a virus. What, how do you know that? Because it's not growing or flowering? There's, as we just talked about, there's a half a dozen reasons or more why that could be the case. So you go to the worst case scenario because maybe that's all you know, or that's what you're afraid of having happen. You have to get past that and work the facts, right? And say, okay, what else could it be? But to your point, Greg, it's important that if you don't know what the variables are, it's just a big mystery, which is where I think this gentleman is it's like, I don't understand what's happening here. Can somebody help me? And folks out there that have a little bit of knowledge and a little bit of experience can share their observations, but we have to keep in mind that that's their single observation from the one time they've seen it happen to them or read about it. I would take more stock in people that respond and saying things like, well, it's just not that simple because you have multiple issues, multiple attributes going on that could be causing interference effects in, masking the severity of one symptom over another, or it could be an additive effect where it's just exacerbating a solution or a situation. So it's not that simple. It's that there's very little in hops that whose answers are single issue because of X.
Yep. Yep. There are always a whole bunch of things contributing to it. And we love seeing questions like this because if it's happening to one person, it's happening to a lot of people. There could be different answers to all those people seeing the same situation, but our goal here is to try and talk through those things.
Right.
And give you guys some perspective. I do have a question, James.
Sure.
And it's less on the science and more on the internal monologue that you are giving our plants. So when a plant says holy balls,
yep.
shouldn't they really be saying holy stamen?
Holy stamens.
Wouldn't that be the more relevant biological expletive for a plant?
It would. And you want to know something even super? You don't want how big of a geek I am. This is how big of a geek I am. When I was in undergrad and I was studying biology, chemistry, I had a T-shirt made that said "Biologists have longer stamens."
Nice.
It's awful. But, it's really awful. I still have it.
By the way, listeners, completely impromptu. This was not at all remote. We rehearsed nothing, by the way. We talked for 3 minutes more about our coffee than we do about our topics, and then we get into
yeah,
this.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, when I heard you say holy balls, I just wrote that down and said
no. That's a no. James euphemism. Holy balls.
I'm well aware of that.
Uh-huh. As well as shit snacks. But, you know, those both of those come from Archer. But anyway.
Yes. So holy stamen from holy now on. Stamen. I want you to think about that.
Yeah. That sounds like something Robin would say. Holy stamens, Batman.
It really does. You know, hostess fruit pie.
Uh-huh.
okay. Dating ourselves.
Yeah, so that's my technical topic. And, you know, people are like, holy crap, James, it's only 10 minutes long. What's wrong with you? You're not feeling well? But I thought it was a perfect example of something that seems so, like it should have such an easy answer. And the potential answers to it also seem, you know, we've been talking that they're simpler than, you know, photo period and day length and switching on and off different enzymes and some of the really technical stuff we've been talking about lately. This is straight up pure horticulture. And many times, you know, and listeners and certainly our patrons, when they come and ask us questions, 9 times out of 10, it's, I need more info.
Sure.
Tell me more. Send me pictures. Give me a background. Just don't say, what's wrong with my plant? It's not flowering.
And that's no different in this than in any other part of life. I mean, I know for myself, the number of emails I get from folks on a regular basis that say, this is broken. Okay, that's not a helpful description of what's going on. I need pictures. Mm-hmm. I need an explanation. What did you do to it? Because user error tends to be my go-to
right.
as a solution for most things that are broken. So, yes, I mean, there's always going to be a back and forth here. There's no such thing as, my hops look like this. Oh, put a little butter on them. They'll
yeah,
be fine.
Yeah, that's all right. Just be okay.
So hopefully this helps our... It was Facebook, right?
You said yeah, that was Facebook, from? Yep.
That was Facebook. All right, so let's hop into some housekeeping.
Ba-dum,
we'll do housekeeping now.
Let's hop into, right. Uh-huh.
Oh, gosh, that was not intentional at all.
And it was awful.
It was awful. And speaking of which, we discussed at least a month ago some housekeeping lead-in music.
We did.
And where is it?
It's on the last podcast that you haven't listened to yet.
Is it uh-huh. really? Oh, okay. All right. Wow. I walked into
you
that
did.
One. Oh, holy. You know what? Holy balls. Oh. You got me.
I was trying to figure out what I was going to say about that. And be like,
So a little more under the covers for you listeners. What typically happens here is we'll record on a weekend. And after we do our recordings, James does a lot of the editing. And then passes that back over to me, and I do the posting and the Instagram and all that. So before I post it, I re-listen to the entire thing, usually in the car with more coffee. So I get some good sound bites of what to talk about when I'm doing the post. But apparently, the episode we are dropping tomorrow has our lead-in music for housekeeping. Mm-hmm. Okay. What would be really funny is if it didn't, and you're just fucking with me right now.
Ooh. Oh, but damn it, I already sent you the file. No.
Ah.
No, it does.
And I've already downloaded it to my phone.
It does.
Excellent.
And it took me like an hour and a half of searching for royalty-free music to find that clip, I'll have you know.
I cannot wait to
and that
hear
was
it.
That was last night. Joy's like, what are you doing? Serious business, honey. Serious business.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I can't wait. Mm-hmm. I cannot wait. Well, please let us know on the Instagram if you like the lead-in music. Because if you don't, and he's got to do this all over again, that'll be even funnier.
Yeah, yeah, funny. Funny. Okay, housekeeping, continue.
Housekeeping! Okay, so Patreon, thank you, Andrew Carson, for joining our patron patrol there. We'll have some more stuff later on to talk about for the patrons, but we're trying to do some new and different things for you guys this year as we roll into the new year. Instagram, I have to read this Instagram comment that we got on one of our posts. This is from Glenn. You made me join Instagram just to follow you. I've been working my way through the episodes and have now listened to more episodes than I have hops plants. That made my week.
Awesome.
And sure enough, I go to Glenn's profile, and Glenn has no followers, no posts, and he's following one person. And that's
the only one he needs.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Glenn, thank you. You are 100% perfect in your Instagram usage, as far as I'm concerned.
Nice.
So that was one of those things. Your phone beeps, you look at it and go, man, I'm going to smile for the rest of the day. That's awesome. We made someone join Instagram. You know what? We can call ourselves social media influencers.
There you go.
Because that was a goal.
Yeah, social media influencers.
Yep.
God help us.
Hey, we still haven't gotten to the point where I'm posting things in a Speedo. But
no.
If things get desperate, we will go there. That's a threat, not a promise.
That's not going to help with the internet monies, though.
No, it's really not. Well, if people will pay for it to stop happening.
That's an interesting angle.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Sort of like holding their eyes for ransom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. So the big thing, and we this by the time you listen to this podcast, this will be out there and available for signups, is we are having our first Hopnology live workshop. So for any of you who know us from our time with Gorse Valley Hops, you'll know that, you know, we used to do these 101 and 201 workshops all the time, not only in the Midwest, but all over the place. You know, great information. The opportunity to add visuals to all the stuff we talk about here really takes it to another level. We'll have that, again, by the time you listen to this, you will see those signups available on the website, and we'll pepper Facebook and Instagram with it. But we're going to be going through four topics, have a lot of time for Q&A, and there will actually be another dedicated, separate, private Q&A session when it's all over for our patrons, for anyone who's a patron as of February 1. So you've got a couple of weeks to jump on the Patreon bandwagon and become a full-fledged supporter of Hopnology and be part of that little group there.
Yeah,
that is growing.
Something I'm really looking forward to. You know, when we were with Gorse Valley, I just ran some quick numbers, and we had a little over 10,000 students total go through our Hops 101 and 201 workshops. And it was the same information all the time, and we just kept giving it and giving it and giving it. It was good info, but there's so much other stuff we wanted to talk about. And now that you and I are doing Hopnology, we have that opportunity to do more of these deep dives, because there's plenty of, you know, intro to how to grow hops out there now. And there really wasn't when we first started, which is why we did that. But now what's lacking is the operation side of things and the business side of things. And the, well, just like we talked about with in the technical segment about the knowing what questions to ask. And those are the things that you can't really get into in a sort of an introduction sort of class. But not to say that our workshops coming up aren't good for people just getting into it, because they are. They will cover those critical topics, but it's a little bit different angle, and it's a new script for us, and so it's got me excited.
Yep, me too. I agree. It's some different stuff, and the fact that our reach will be so much different. You're right. We hit about 10,000 people over the course of that, which is incredible. Most of that in the Midwest, because that's where they were physically located. And we always had the questions of, can I just buy the deck? Can I call in? And we just didn't have that set up. We talked about it and didn't set it up. And this is the opportunity now for folks who are not near either one of us to be part of this whole situation. We did one in upstate New York. We did a couple in a few other places. But I'll never forget the time we had two guys fly in from Japan.
Yep.
To Madison.
Mm-hmm.
to come to our workshop.
Yep, we had a global reach, but we were focused domestic most of the time. However, that has totally changed now. So the only thing we have to deal with is time zones. So we're trying to set these up so they bracket the largest percentage of our listening audience, because we know where you are, and hopefully we'll be able to have an exchange with everybody, and you'll be able to see our ugly mugs. Yeah, have a good chat.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, it will be online and live, so you'll get to see us, for better or worse. That may be when the whole Speedo thing
No.
But we'll have the ability for folks to ask questions and actually have interaction back and forth, which is something that also is missing from the podcast format, is the ability to live interact. So check out our website, check out Instagram, look to register for that. We are super excited about getting folks together and meeting the Hopnology community, mm-hmm. really, for the first time in mass, and having some good conversations. This should be a lot of fun. So tell us about what you did over Christmas.
I got the hell out of Dodge. nice. Yeah, so for those of you that know myself and my wife, we like to travel. And so we travel all over the place. The Caribbean's one of our favorite locations. So we just this year over the holidays, because neither of us enjoy the holidays, we decided to go to Aruba. We had never been there before. We've traveled extensively in the Caribbean, but that was one of those islands that we just had never gone to. So we said, yeah, what the heck? Let's go down there and see what it's all about. So we were in Aruba, and it's a desert island, which is my favorite type. I don't go in for all the bugs and rain. And aside from it being stupid busy, and Greg, I don't understand who turned off the lights when the last person left the East Coast.
were they all there?
They were
with you?
All there with me, all of them.
Nice.
I'm pretty nice. Sure the entire state of New Jersey was empty. however,
well, you have to understand. I mean, I lived in New Jersey for a time, and if you're either at a beach or in your car on the Garden State Parkway or the Turnpike, There's nothing else to do in New Jersey but drive through toll booths.
Yeah.
Or go bother folks.
That's
on the beach.
That's something. And I guess that they weren't really having beach time there this time of year. So they went to Aruba to do it. So note to self, don't go to Aruba during Christmas. that's just not my bag. But it was interesting. A couple of things of note, because I can't go anywhere and not understand the beer culture. So if you ever travel the Caribbean, and you're interested in beer, one of the things that you're going to find is that every island seems like has their own beer label. And 9 times out of 10, no, I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say 10 times out of 10, 100% of the time, they are light lagers, because it's refreshing when it's hot. The last thing you want when you are sweating your hojos off is a Belgian triple. So
you're stamming.
Yeah, so you want something refreshing. And it must be from the European colonialism or whatever, but lagers, which blows my mind, because they need to be fermented much colder and kept colder. Let's brew lagers in the Caribbean. Same thing. Let's brew lagers in Mexico instead of ales. The thing that really surprised me about Aruba is that I could not buy a beer more than 7.4 ounces at a time.
That's so strange.
All the bottles were tiny. The specials people would have. So one of the main lagers there is called Balashi. And it's pretty good. But it's 7.4 ounces. And there's these tiny little pounder bottles. And they're charging you $5.50 for them. That's not like resort price. That's like go to the bar where the locals go and have a Balashi, and it's freaking $5.50. Excuse me? For how many ounces of beer? Wow. What the hell?
You need a shot of grain with each beer just to keep the alcohol.
Exactly, yeah. So yeah. We went to a national park there, and she's looking on the map, and all around the map they've got advertisements. And there's one for this brewery called Fireson Microbrewery. And their tagline is Aruba's biggest and smallest craft brewery, because it's the only one on the island. And I'm like, I have got to see this. I got to try this out.
They don't even have a website.
No, I know. Luckily for us, it wasn't on the opposite end of the island. It was a 10-minute walk from our hotel. So I'm like, we're doing this.
I'm sure Joy was thrilled as a non-beer person.
Joy was didn't care because there were so many trinkets and trash stores for her to shop in that I could have sat in there for hours and been carried out by paramedics, and she would have been pleased as punch. I go in there, and not exactly sure what I'm going to find. The owner and brewer, Tony, was standing behind the bar, and you guys probably saw the pics on Instagram Greg put up. He is a born and bred Aruban, and for those of you who don't know, Aruba is a Dutch island. So he spent a little over a year in the Netherlands and really got hooked on the beer culture there and came back to Aruba. He's got a degree in chemical engineering and came back to Aruba and was pissed off because the import tariffs, the duties on craft beer are outrageous. He just couldn't get the quality of the beer that he got used to in the Netherlands, so he started brewing himself as a home brewer. Flash forward 4 years later. four years. So he's home brewing. He did one extract brew, and then he went to all grain immediately. Flash forward 4 years, and he opens Fireson Brewery. So Tony Fireson's his name. Has got a good start at building an actual brand on that island, but it's tiny. He's brewing in basically a homebrew setup. I would say a serious homebrew setup, but you know, he doesn't have full size half barrel kegs. He's using little corny kegs. It's all about scale, right? So he's more like a nano brewery than he is a microbrewery, but he's got a good thing going there. As I like to do, I go in right when they open so that there's very few people in there so I can talk to the actual owners and brewers and stuff. And we had a really good talk about the state of craft beer, even on the island, and why he had, you know, of the six or seven things he had on tap, why five of them were IPAs. And it just blows his mind. You know, why is it like this? And I said, well, Tony, you don't have any hard seltzers yet. He's like, yeah, that's a thing in the States now, right? I'm like, yep, it's coming your way. And he's like, because he was talking to me about, he had one IPA that was not hazy because he said people expect it to be that way now. When they come into his bar or his brewery, they expect that this is what an IPA is supposed to look like. He's like, no, this is a hazy IPA, and an APA is like this. They don't care. They're like, no, I need to have an IPA because that's what they think they need. So per all of our ramblings that we have about the state of the beer industry, it's no different in frickin' an island 10 miles off the coast of Venezuela.
Granted, an island that's mostly patronized by New Jersey.
yeah, that's true. But there's more than just the U.S. there. I mean, there's people from all over the world, and certainly from South America. But that's what they think. And it's just, he's just like, how do you deal with that? He's like, I've got people that come in here and complain because these are the only IPAs I have on tap.
And you said, what, five of his eight beers are IPAs? Wow. And that's not uncommon. It's not uncommon at all.
No, but...
But for that to be a complaint.
Right. And he said the other biggest complaint he gets is when his IPAs don't taste like grapefruit.
Oh, sure.
Because they all have to taste like grapefruit. So we were talking about other hops like Sabro, which is coconut, and Brooklyn, which is stone fruit and dark berries and things like that. And he's like, people don't get it. It's like you make something with those and you give it to them. They're like, this isn't an IPA. IPAs are supposed to taste like grapefruit. It's like I die a little bit inside every time I think about that. It's awful.
Well, but you did say that his stout was fantastic.
His stout was incredible. And a lot of that comes down to the water, because that whole island, their water is desalinization. So basically it's pretty damn close to reverse osmosis water that they're producing for the entire island to drink. So he has to rebuild his water from scratch every time he brews something. So he has an incredible opportunity that a lot of other brewers and home brewers don't have, which is clean slate. And so his water chemistry was spot on for stouts. Some of his IPAs were a bit astringent, and that comes down to water chemistry too. I also applauded him for having such hop forward beers without relying on the likes of, you know, some of them had Citra in them, which is my least favorite hop, but they were used appropriately.
Okay.
And I actually liked a couple, and I posted on the homebrew club here that I'm a member of, because they're always harping on me about how I don't like A, hazy IPAs, and B, anything with Citra in it. And I'm like, no, I don't like your guys's because you don't understand what light-handed means. But there, I got a chance to try a couple of up-and-coming hop varieties that people are talking about. One's called Strata, and the other one is called Medusa. And, of course, they're both proprietary. But I was pleasantly surprised by them. They were tropical fruity without being sulfury cat pissy. And so that was quite a joy.
And, you know, what an opportunity for him. As I look through all these Aruba tourist sites, everyone talks about them as the one and only craft brewery in Aruba. It's not a big island.
No.
So, I mean, you were walking distance, but pretty much anything's walking distance.
Not quite. But, yeah, it's tiny. Wow. Yeah, it was a good time. And he wasn't hurting for business. He did say tourism was down a little bit, but he wasn't hurting for business. He's super small. He is struggling from the image that a craft brewery has to have a restaurant, which we're past that in the States now. I mean, tap rooms are totally acceptable now. But sure. Down there, it's like, well, you don't have food? What am I supposed to do, right? Well, you go eat and then you come drink. That's what you're supposed to do. So he has to play double duty. He has to play triple duty. Owner, brewer, quadruple duty, bartender, and cook. So,
oh boy.
You know, it's growing pains. So he's been there about a year and a half, and I think he's got a bright future.
That's great. So much fun to stumble onto something like that and see something new and good. And yet frustrating to see the same issues with IPAs.
I went there twice, right, about a couple of days apart. And one day I was in there, he's talking to me, and I introduced myself and told him, you know, who I am and what I do. Gave him a card, and I teach at Siebel Institute and hop chemistry and aroma science. And he's like, oh, I got this aroma sensory kit coming from the Barth Haas group. I'm like, oh, that'll be fun. I'm like, I'll send you one from the Siebel Institute. We got like 30 different aromas in there. He's like, oh, it's going to be awesome. So then I went in 2 days later, and he had actually gotten the Barth Haas kit, and he was all excited. He's like, James, come here, look what I got. And so
twice. Uh-huh.
And so we open it up, and he's like, now why can't I smell this one like I can smell this one, and this one's less, isn't as strong. I'm like, well, put it in your hand and heat it up. And he's like, oh wow, I didn't even think about that. So I love those interactions, opportunities I get with people where you can just give them, as you're talking the technology and they're asking questions, and you can provide them some insight, that little light bulb goes on. It's so rewarding to see that.
Nice.
That was my trip.
Cool. Very cool. And, you know, you mentioned Strata, which I shared a article with you the other day that I had seen a bunch of brewers interviewed about what's the next big thing we're going to see in 2020. And about half of them mentioned Strata.
Yeah, that's an interesting hop to talk about because it's proprietary, quote unquote. But the story behind that is that Indy Hops out in Oregon, they basically bought that hop to patent. So it was being developed by the university, and Indy Hops donated $1 million. Donated $1 million to research efforts. And lo and behold, they had already had this hop in development. And said, oh, okay, well, we'll use this money to continue doing it, supposedly. This is me being the conspiracy theorist. And lo and behold, Indy Hops has the patent rights to this hop called Strata. So that's a story there.
It'd be interesting to start seeing that show up in a whole bunch of advertising. Once we get past dry January, of course.
I refuse to partake.
We rehearse nothing, by the way.